The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Another week this week that went by even faster than last week. It's crazy how fast these days are moving. We've got a lot to get to on today's program. Another blistering speech at the UN, and we'll play some highlights from Ambassador Haley's address yesterday in front of this very hostile body, at least with respect to Jerusalem. For sure. And also, we'll look at Europe's response to President Trump's America First doctrine. I think you know where we're going to come down on that subject. In fact, we've discussed it before on this this program. How is Europe reacting to America really being concerned about America First? And then coming up later in the program, we have lots and lots of emails that have piled up over the past week, so we'll try to get through as many of those as we can. Just one programming note, too. On Monday, we'll be doing a study on the mystery of Babylon, so I think you'll find that's meat in due season for so many of you. I think you'll find it interesting. So we'll get into that on Monday's program. And speaking of meat in due season, we're coming into the Christmas holiday here in the UK. I mean, that's huge in the UK, in the United States, of course, all across the Western world, as people are now off of work and celebrating the holidays, Christmas, New Year's, and so on. And as we've brought out so many times before, few people ever even stop to consider why they believe these particular days or believe the things that they do believe. Why do they follow along with all of these customs and traditions without first having proven their origins? You know, why we observe them? Human nature, as we know, it just tends to follow along with the crowd. But what if, in this case, what if the crowd is wrong? Shouldn't we at least look into this subject ourselves?
Now, Christmas is supposed to be the chief of the Christian holidays. It's supposed to be a very strictly Bible thing that is enjoined and commanded on everybody, but is it? Where did it come from? Where did these customs start? Most of us just accept them, we assume them, we never question why. And then again, we'll wind up with this. Well, I don't see that it makes any difference anyhow. Are you sure? Now, what does the Bible say about that? Does the Bible really have any authority today, after all, or does it mean anything?
That's a soundbite from Herbert W. Armstrong, his old radio program on the Ten Commandments and Christmas. Now that most, as I said leading into it, most just kind of go along with the crowd, and we just assume these days to be religious. And even if we know that they're not, well, does it really make any difference what days we choose to observe or not? For so many people, I mean, this time of year is associated with lots and lots of warm feelings, fond memories, family get-togethers. But why is it at this time of year, why do you see so much behavior that's altogether selfish and very much unmerry? Look at the tradition of gift-giving. I'll play another clip in a moment where Mr. Armstrong addresses that. But look at the addiction to materialism. That's all that it's really boiled down to now. Just the attitude or the way of get. And of course, the businesses or the stores that are out there, they're just looking to boost profits at this time of year. I mean, that's what the bottom line is for them. And then you have consumers, like on Black Friday, just scrambling to take advantage of bargains or deals. You have all these ads coming out. You've got to get it now so that you can deliver it by Christmas. The focus, this focus on consumerism. I mean, look at the many other problems associated with that. Families going into debt. The bills stacking up. Why are there so many people at this time of year who are depressed and discouraged? Sometimes it's related to financial problems. Sometimes it's related to family problems. There was an article, I didn't have a chance to get to it yesterday, that just talked about the growing family in the sense that there's been so many, you know, divisions, divorces and such, that you have now all kinds of step this and step that. It's hard to keep track of. Maybe some are like many in this world who just feel like that, well, there might be some problems with it, but the good, you know, outweighs the bad. But going back to what Herbert Armstrong said there in that clip, I mean, whatever your opinion might be about this holiday or these holidays, what is God's opinion? And does it matter? Does it matter what God has to say or what God thinks about Christmas? He has a position. I mean, he has something to say about it. In fact, he's very interested in this time of year, in the sense that he wants us to sit up and take note and look into it. I mean, the word itself, it's the Mass of Christ, or Christ Mass, so it's supposed to be religious, one would think, just judging by the name. So what is Christ? He's in the name. What does Christ have to say about it? Did you know that the Christmas celebration, as it's observed today, it was started by the Roman Church during the 4th century A.D.? Not the 1st century with the original apostles. We're talking about 300 or 400 years after Christ. The Catholic Encyclopedia, this is the 1911 edition, it says Christmas was not among the earliest festivals of the church. The first evidence of the feast is from Egypt. So here again, we're not even getting into the Bible yet. I'll have a few scriptures here in just a second. But this is from the Catholic Encyclopedia that admitted, at least in 1911, it was not among the earliest festivals of the church. And of course, if you give an honest reading of the New Testament, you'll see that. You'll discover that. So if it wasn't observed in the early New Testament church, on what authority? On what authority was it introduced later, centuries later? According to the Encyclopedia Americana, this is the 1944 edition, it says Christmas was, according to many authorities, not celebrated in the first centuries of the Christian church, as the Christian usage in general was to celebrate the death of remarkable persons rather than their birth. A feast was established in memory of this event, speaking of Christmas or Christ's birth, in the fourth century. It says in the 5th century, the Western Church ordered it to be celebrated forever on the day of the old Roman feast of the birth of Saul, S-O-L, as no certain knowledge of the day of Christ's birth existed. We'll see that from the scriptures here in just a second. But here Christmas was not observed by Christians for at least 300-400 years. 300 or 400 years, I mean, that's longer than the entire history of the United States of America. We're not talking about 2 or 3 months here. These sources, and you can get to them, it's not that difficult to prove. They say that the Roman Church introduced the festival in the 4th century A.D. It's the Church of Rome that ordered it to be celebrated as an official Christian festival in the 4th or 5th century. Hundreds and hundreds of years after Jesus Christ's ministry. How about that? And his name is in the festival. Listen to what Herbert Armstrong said in another message. This is also from his old radio program, I think, clip 3.
December 25th is not Christ's birthday. The wise men presented gifts to Christ, but they didn't do it on his birthday, and it had nothing to do with his birthday. He was born to be the king of the Jews, and it was customary to present gifts to a king or any great personage. And it had nothing to do with a birthday. It had nothing to do with Christmas whatsoever. And they gave their gifts to Christ. Today, people think they follow it, while they trade gifts among themselves on a day that is not the birthday of Christ, but for many, many centuries prior to Christ, was honored as the birthday of Saul, the sun god, in pagan, idolatrous worship, believe it or not.
Yes, believe it or not. Believe it or not. Look back at those early centuries. Before the 4th century AD, Christians, few in number, they were scattered, and they were mostly persecuted by the Roman government, by the pagans. But then, of course, when Emperor Constantine came along and converted to Roman Catholicism, that happened in the 4th century, he set out to put Christianity on equal footing with paganism in these many pagan festivals that the pagans observed. He wanted the pagans to convert to the Roman Church. And the most popular pagan custom of the day was Saturnalia and Brumalia. As Mr. Armstrong says there, a sun worship festival that occurred right around this time of year, December 17th to the 25th. In the Encyclopedia Britannica, it says the reason why Christmas came to be celebrated on December 25th remains uncertain, but most probably, listen to this, this is an encyclopedia. Most probably the reason is that early Christians wished the date to coincide with the pagan Roman festival marking the birthday of the unconquered sun. They wanted it to coincide with the date of this pagan Roman festival in order to draw more non-religious Romans into the world of Christianity. That's the truth. As I say, we haven't even gotten to the Bible yet. We're just touching on a little history, just digging into a few encyclopedias. In his booklet, The Plain Truth About Christmas, this is Herbert Armstrong's, he said, remember, these people had grown up in pagan customs, chief of which was this idolatrous festival of December 25th. It was a festival of merrymaking with its special spirit. They enjoyed it. They enjoyed it. They didn't want to give it up. It says the influence of the pagan Manichaeism, which identified the Son of God with the physical Son, gave these pagans of the 4th century, now turning over wholesale to Christianity, their excuse for calling their pagan festival date on December 25th. Birthday of the Sun God, he says. The birthday of the Sun God. Mr. Armstrong says, and that is how Christmas became fastened on our Western world. We may call it. We may call it by another name. But it's the same old pagan sun-worshipping festival. The only change is in what we call it. We've just put the stamp of Christ on it. Christ Mass. Mr. Armstrong, in that booklet, he went on to say, you can call a rabbit a lion if you want to. But it's still a rabbit. It's not a lion. You can put any label you want on top of it. But it's still what it is. In Luke 2, let's just look at one Bible passage. Just one. And then I'll leave it to you to look at the encyclopedias. Luke 2, in verse 4, it says, and Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David. So here we read of the actual birth of Jesus Christ, as described by as described here in the Gospel of Luke. It says in verse 5, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there in Bethlehem, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered, and she brought forth her firstborn son and wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. So there's no specific date given here. Now just think, if it was important, if it was important for us to celebrate this event, if God commanded us to celebrate this event, surely he would have given us a date. Well, that brings up another point. If there was a clearly expressed command to keep Christmas, nobody would do it. Nobody would. Because that's the way it is in the Bible. If it says do it, mankind doesn't do it. If it says not to do it, mankind goes ahead and does it. But just look at the timing here. It doesn't give a specific date, but it does give a general time period in the year anyway. Verse 8 says, "And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night." Shepherds out in the field. That wouldn't have happened in the middle of winter. Not on December 25th or any other day around it. And again, you can establish this fact with really any good Bible commentary. The exact date of Christ's birth is not known. All authorities acknowledge this. In fact, if you look at the season, the fact that the shepherds are out in the field at night, the probability here is that Christ was born sometime in September or October. Sometime in early autumn. But that doesn't even matter. We don't know the date. It's not revealed in Scripture. And that's exactly the way God wanted it to be. One final clip here from Mr. Armstrong. This is clip 4.
Now, the facts, for instance, about Christmas are very easily accessible to anyone. All you have to do is to look into any history or encyclopedia covering the matter. Look up the article Christmas. Just look for the word Christmas in, for instance, the Catholic Encyclopedia, which I think you can find in the public library, or in the Encyclopedia Britannica, or any reputable, reliable encyclopedia, and many other works that will give the history of it. And you will be surprised to see that it is an ancient pagan festival. You will be surprised to see that Jesus Christ never taught it or commanded it, that the early apostles never observed it, that the Church of God at Jerusalem, which was the headquarters church to which the other churches came when they wanted to straighten out a point of doctrine.
That's Herbert Armstrong from one of his old programs, talking about how it's easily accessible, this knowledge, this information. You can prove it. He goes through it in his booklet, The Plain Truth About Christmas. But you can do a simple study on it yourself and find out the true origins. I've told the story in class before with my wife. She went into a restaurant years ago, and whatever reason it came up, she mentioned that she didn't observe Christmas. And this gal behind the counter at the cash register, her eyes lit up and said, "Well, I don't either. I'm an atheist. And in fact, I'm kind of upset that the Christians stole this festival from me, from us." She knew about the history. She knew where it came from. And she doesn't like the fact that it's now a so-called Christian holiday. When in fact, if you go back far enough, comes right out of ancient Babylon. Well, Mr. Armstrong, as I said, he goes through that well enough in his booklet. I'd urge you, if you haven't studied this particular subject, I'm not sure if we have it by that particular title. We do have a booklet, The Truth About Christmas. We also have the Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days, which both of those would be an excellent study. At this time of year, you're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. You can email the program if you like. We've got a lot of emails to get to later on today's show. But you too can write us at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Why Christmas? Where and when did it start? Why do so many people observe it today? What keeps Christmas going? For answers to these questions and more, Request The Truth About Christmas. It's an eye-opening booklet that will truly astound you. People seldom stop to consider why they believe the things they believe, why they do the things they do. They simply don't know how they came to believe what they do. In The Truth About Christmas, you will learn why people have come to observe one day above others. As part of this free offer, we would also like to give you another booklet by Herbert W. Armstrong, Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days, which? God's Holy Days, which can be found in Leviticus 23, are pure, free from paganism, idolatry, materialism, falsehood, and compromise. And far more than that, they contain spectacular truth that man-made traditions and customs do not, and never have contained. God's Holy Days map out His divine plan for mankind. They show how God will redeem the vast majority of mankind, living and dead, Christian and pagan, how He will bring them to repentance of their sins, grant them forgiveness through Jesus Christ, and lead them to true, pure religion, an exciting and eternal future. Call now and request these two free booklets, The Truth About Christmas and Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days, which? To order the free material online, just visit our website at thetrumpet.com. And don't forget to tune in to kpcg.fm every weekday afternoon at 1 p.m. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
As many of you know, the UN Security Council voted 14-1 on Monday to demand that President Trump rescind his decision to recognize Jerusalem and as the capital, I mean. And the decision to move the U.S. embassy there, the one dissent in that body, it was the United States, of course, and it was the U.S. veto that kept this motion from passing. And so the U.N., the United Nations, responded to that by holding a vote for the entire General Assembly, and this happened yesterday. And the vote, I mean, the vote itself doesn't amount to anything officially, but it gave all of the member states of the UN a chance to openly rebuke the United States. And the final tally, in case you're interested, 128 countries, 128 voted in favor of the resolution rejecting President Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. You have nations that voted for this, like Britain and the Netherlands and New Zealand and Japan and Germany and Austria and France and Spain and Afghanistan and Iraq. We've had troops there for years. We've spilled all kinds of blood to try to eliminate the scourge of terrorism in those two nations in particular. Jordan voted for it, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, as I mentioned the other day, they just announced that they intend to move their embassy to East Jerusalem, and there's no resolution aimed at Turkey, but Turkey gets on the platform and says Donald Trump's decision is null and void, whatever that's supposed to mean. Russia voted in favor of this as well. And Russia said back in April that it considered Jerusalem to be Israel's capital. All 128, only nine nations voted against this motion yesterday. There were 35 that abstained, that I guess didn't want to get involved or didn't want their opinion to go on record one way or the other. But only nine nations voted against the motion. The United States, of course. Israel, of course. And then the other seven, you have Togo, Palau, Nauru, Micronesia, the Marshall Islands, and then Honduras and Guatemala. The last three I recognize. We can't get Britain support, but Togo is on board. It's what a body this is, the United Nations, in New York. I mean, it's there solely to attack the little state of Israel. That's what it amounts to. Leading up to this vote, well, you know about how Ambassador Haley responded to that UN Security Council vote on Monday. And then I guess she heard that this next phase was going to come down the line, what happened yesterday. And she sent an email out. This was reported in Foreign Policy. She sent out an email to her fellow ambassadors saying, as you consider your vote, I want you to know that the president and the United States take this vote personally. The president will be watching this vote carefully and has requested I report back on those countries who voted against it. We will take note of each and every vote on this issue. And she said as much yesterday following this vote, where there was overwhelming support to condemn President Trump and his decision to move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. This next clip here, this is the highlights of her speech. I think her speech was like 15 minutes, and here's a couple of minutes as it was put together by the Associated Press. Clip one.
The United States will remember this day in which it was singled out for attack in the General Assembly for the very act of exercising our right as a sovereign nation. We will remember it when we are called upon to once again make the world's largest contribution to the United Nations. And we will remember it when so many countries come calling on us, as they so often do, to pay even more and to use our influence for their benefit. When we make generous contributions to the UN, we also have a legitimate expectation that our goodwill is recognized and respected. When a nation is singled out for attack in this organization, that nation is disrespected. What's more, that nation is asked to pay for the privilege of being disrespected. In the case of the United States, we are asked to pay more than anyone else for that dubious privilege. Unlike in some UN member countries, the United States government is answerable to its people. As such, we have an obligation to acknowledge when our political and financial capital is being poorly spent. We have an obligation to demand more for our investment. And if our investment fails, we have an obligation to spend our resources in more productive ways. America will put our embassy in Jerusalem. That is what the American people want us to do. And it is the right thing to do. No vote in the United Nations will make any difference on that. But this vote will make a difference on how Americans look at the UN and on how we look at countries who disrespect us in the UN. And this vote will be remembered.
Now, following that speech yesterday, you could almost hear half of America cheering wildly for someone getting up and saying, I mean, this is the very definition of America first, what she said yesterday. This has been one of President Trump's mottos. This is how to make America great again, the way he sees it. We've got to start putting America first. And so here is his ambassador yesterday in front of the UN saying that, look, you guys need us more than we need you. Look at how much money we're funding this operation. I mean, the headquarters itself is in New York. It's on U.S. soil. So it is. It's a ridiculous joke to anyone that's looking at this objectively. But that said, and we touched on this yesterday or the day before, I mean, there is an element of risk here for the Trump administration. I mean, he's got to follow through now. For the general body to follow the Security Council vote on Monday with this yesterday, I mean, they're thumbing their nose, so many of these nations, at the United States. And so what happens if the funding continues? If the U.S. pays for most of this? Well, the president's going to come off looking like this was nothing more than bluster. I don't know. Maybe he will withdraw some of the funding. Maybe he is taking notes. Maybe he is going to keep back funding from some of these nations that come begging to the United States when they need help. We'll see, I suppose. But I think the other risk that's especially worth drawing attention to is that in the world as it is today, the United States, in a weakening and an ever-weakening position, when you look at the military being depleted of its strength, I mean, the United States needs international partners. It needs coalitions. And if, as some of these next stories that I'll go through, I mean, if the reaction here, besides this Jerusalem issue, leaving that aside, I mean, the America First doctrine, if that prompts these other regions or these other nations or these other unions to go it alone or separate and apart from the United States, I mean, it really does isolate the United States. And we know from Bible prophecy that the United States and Britain, even though they're divided on this issue, they're both going to be isolated, shut out of a trade war, or rather a trade alliance, victims of a trade war. This article from Germany, it's at handelsblatt.com. It says, President Donald Trump's erratic leadership and America First approach have galvanized the European Union. This is according to a senior member of the EU Parliament. He's writing an op-ed for Handelsblatt, and he's saying, look, this is what we need. I mean, this is what we need to galvanize the leadership of the EU. He writes here, the good news is that the EU seems to understand that if it can't rely on the U.S., it needs to take matters into its own hands by pursuing more integrated security and defense policies. See, that's what's significant with respect to Bible prophecy. A Europe led by Germany, taking matters into its own hands. And as President Trump rightly pointed out earlier this week, I played the clip for you. I mean, some of these nations that aren't contributing to the military, to the costs of some of these struggles, they're wealthy nations. They have plenty of resources. But they've been, militarily at least, they've been living off the United States for decades. He says here in Handelsblatt, we will take further concrete steps to improve cooperation among European armed forces. Collectively, listen to this, collectively, European armies have more soldiers than the U.S. and spend more on defense than Russia or China. But their efficiency is equivalent to just 10 to 15% of that of the U.S. Analysts estimate that the lack of effective defense cooperation among EU member states costs up to 100 billion euro annually. So basically he's saying, look, the resources are there, but we just haven't worked together on this. I'm reading a book, as an aside here. It's a book about business and just the importance of working together as a team and how much inefficiency there is when you've got all of these separate groups working on various parts of the project and there's no communication or togetherness that helps everyone understand that they're all on the same page or make sure that they're on the same page. It's the same thing here. I mean, once you finally get the unity, of course it's a mixture of iron and clay, Daniel 2 says, but there's a lot of strength there. Revelation 17 says that. I mean, there, even Daniel 2, for that matter, there is iron-like strength. There are kings. There are rulers. There is a beast power. So when they finally get it, when it finally clicks, when the ten are on the same page, well, listen to what he says. I mean, we have more soldiers than the U.S. You put us together, And with even with what meager contribution we're making individually, the way that Trump looks at it, you put it all together and we spend more on defense than Russia or China. It says further, as for trade, Mr. Trump's suspicion that even rejection of international trade agreements has created a large political vacuum that others, especially China, will seek to fill. As Mr. Trump continues to tout his nationalist approach to trade, America's partners are looking to deepen their relationships with one another. The recent trade deal between the EU, which accounts for more world trade than China and the U.S. combined, and Japan, the deal between the EU and Japan will be the world's largest. So when they come together in opposition to the United States, wow, look out. And that's prophesied. He says, finally, the geostrategic implications of this trend should not be underestimated. If Mr. Trump continues on the path toward protectionism, America's trading partners will retaliate. See, they will retaliate. So there's quite a few in America cheering on the president and his ambassador to the UN. But I think these two votes, the one Monday and then the one yesterday, it shows, I mean, there is strength in numbers. These number of nations, 128 nations coming together to denounce something the United States says that it wants to do with an embassy. It says, finally, the EU must recognize that the U.S. will not be as reliable a partner in the coming years as it has been since the end of World War II, and it must adjust accordingly. It must adjust, and it is. So is China. So is Russia. The world is adjusting. It's changing so fast, dramatically so. Bible prophecy, the pace of it. It really is accelerating. Well, there's some other news items I wanted to get to here, but just to save us a few extra minutes for the emails, I'll cut it off there. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll get into those emails. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
At the end of yesterday's show, we finished with a segment on the importance of sleep and showed how that our sleep habits, they really do factor into good health. Well, if the sleep habits are good anyway. And I think that article I read from yesterday showed how sleep deprivation, it's connected to a lot of diseases. And of course, just when you look at productivity at work and such, I touched on some of these things yesterday. A couple of comments coming in response to that. This one here says, as time is which the devil would take away from us over all physical commodities, sleep is another time which the devil would deprive us of via late night entertainment, which is not refreshing at all. Why must so many social events have to take place so late in the day? In order to participate in those, it gives one severe jet lag all the time in order to maintain a working schedule. But soon we will be doing all things God's way, and the devil will no more be heard in the night with sleepless wickedness which does rob us of rest and of prayer. This one here comes from our very own KPCG commentator, Richard Palmer. He, again, writing in response to that final segment yesterday about sleep. He says, I was chatting to someone recently who said to me, I really like it when you're on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I play it at the end of the day when I'm in bed, and you're great for helping me to go to sleep. So good for Richard, I think. He actually helped someone with his sleep routine, Richard went on to say. Having said that, someone else told me they listen to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show when they work out. So at least one person finds the show invigorating. To each his own. Well, sleep, I have to admit myself, sometimes if I wake up in the middle of the night, I'll turn on the radio, and there is something soothing about the radio, at least in my case, having it down, I guess, softly playing in the background. But I think it was Joel Hilliker who, either he had an article or a message recently, it was pretty corrective, but it's made me love this Psalm, Psalm 63. I think we went through this on a recent program just because of that lecture that I heard. But it's a wonderful psalm. It's now one of my favorites. Here's David talking about how he sought after God early in the morning. And then in this psalm, he even talks about how he followed hard after God. I mean, he really, and even when he woke up in the middle of the night, he said, I remember you upon my bed and meditate on you in the night watches. I mean, when David couldn't sleep, he was meditating on God's word, on God's way of life. Pretty amazing. Whatever it takes to make it productive. And then, as one of our listeners brought out when we went through that psalm, even after trying this out, this psalm, it's amazing that when you go back to sleep, at least the way she put it, the sleep is even more refreshing. So in any event, that's enough about sleep. If you want to listen to more about it, we covered it for about 15 minutes at the tail end of yesterday's show. A few emails coming in response to the trumpet brief about President Obama and Hezbollah. This one here says, thank you for this trumpet brief. Much needed. It's much needed for my daily prayers. It's fascinating to see prophecy unfold. It's been almost 6 years since my baptism, and each year in God's church becomes more exciting. Another one says, thank you for this brief. I've heard many news reports on this, but your trumpet brief really helped me understand the magnitude and severity of the matter. At what length would this American president go to push his agenda and undermine the security of biblical Israel? As time passes, the fact that Mr. Obama was indeed an Antiochus type who was bent on destroying Israel becomes more and more obvious. That came in from the Philippines. Another one here says, after watching Obama's antics while he was the presiding POTUS or president, I could only reach the conclusion that everything he did was intentional and calculated. The only open question is whether he was pulling his own strings or if they were being pulled by someone else. It says, the final result of Obama's presidency is the Iran we see today that has become the king of the South. Another one here says, it amazes me how blind people can be in this nuclear deal with Iran. Hezbollah's drug support of the Mexican drug cartels is undermining America's future. Further on, it says, President Trump has most of America's ills pegged correctly. Whether his methods to right the ship are correct or not remains to be seen. As a giant supertanker takes miles to turn around or to stop, the president's policymaking will not usually show true effect for many months or even years. And then there at the end of his email, he says, I truly admire your articles and their association with the truth in the Bible. They keep everything in perspective, and that's difficult to do in today's spin news. One final one here in response to that brief. It says, well overdue in relaying my appreciation and deep thanks for all these precious trumpet briefs and the most inspiring, thought-provoking, and full of glorious truth Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I've reread your brief 3 times as the scale of the deception, lies, betrayal, the vanity to get a nuclear deal with the mullahs. It's unbelievable. It takes me right back to when your father expressed this as the worst foreign policy blunder in America's history. Totally agree with everything that has been written and the information on your radio show. It says, I have not been well for a while, but am coming right each day. What a joy. The Trumpet Briefs and your daily radio program, and also the Trumpet.com website. They have truly kept me inspired, bringing me comfort spiritually and physically, helping me to get my mind off myself and my present circumstances. What hope they bring us. Such blessings, you and all the team, thundering forth God's precious truth, and with such great passion and zeal, most infectious. That came in from New Zealand. This one here comes in response to the program on Wednesday. That was the show about Austria, and we had a little segment there about Sigmund Freud at the end. And she writes here, thanks for the heads up on Freud, The Making of an Illusion. I just put it on hold in our local library. When I saw the headline on Friday, just before I went to bed, that Sebastian Kurz had formed a coalition government with the Freedom Party, I knew the Trumpet would have something to say about it. There was little or nothing said in the mainstream media. The Trumpet told us to watch for this, and voila, here it is. Keep up the most excellent work at the Edstone campus. We truly appreciate all that you do. That comes from Canada, but that's certainly one of the many benefits of this program and of the Trumpet.com is just understanding the significance of some of these events that aren't even covered. As I said in that Austria program on Wednesday, I mean, here it joins up with the Freedom Party, established by a Nazi in 1956, a former Nazi, an SS officer, in fact. And yet, nobody thinks anything of it. And the EU is rather happy with this arrangement. Well, they're pro-EU, they're pro-Austria. So good for them. Here's a young, up-and-coming politician, Sebastian Kurz. I mean, we've got to get behind him. He's got populist support. That's the thinking. But like I said, with respect to holidays and observances, I mean, how something gets off and running, what happened at the start, the history, in other words, it's important. People just want to brush it aside and look at it just on the surface as it is right in front of your face. And if someone smiles or says, this is holy or this is righteous or this is good, then we just go along. We just go along with it. We just go along with the crowd. That's why we need God's truth. Another email response here says, as Israel, particularly Israel, is given no right to choose where to place its own capital, neither is the Jewish state of Israel given the right to choose to exist then anywhere on this planet as a legitimate nation of legitimate people. And no matter how long the Jewish and Hebrew people have existed on this earth, I mean, that's according to the UN. You take their line of reasoning, they don't deserve a state, let alone a Jerusalem capital. The Jewish people have been around many times longer than the body of the UN, but the UN somehow has the right to force them, or at least they think they do, they really don't, force them off the map. If the UN itself wishes to be recognized as a legitimate peacekeeping organization, it ought to face reality. This one here came in response to Tuesday's program. That's where we talked about television and wasting away a lot of time. She says here, is from Massachusetts, I've been so blessed in that God in my early adult years took away a childhood-long habit of watching way too much television. It's one of the great stories of my life that he made me a totally different person in this respect. Formerly, languishing in front of a show after show all day long on beautiful summer days, and then choking out more livelihood by adding lots of junk food. It's no wonder I often felt sick to my stomach as a youth. As an adult, it's harder to remain inside on nice days, and I have not watched television in my own home to pass time in many, many years. It also saves on cable bills when you just use it for an occasional DVD. People have asked me what I do with my time, not having TV to watch, as I struggle constantly to perfect my use of time and fit everything in. I honestly have no idea how anyone can watch a TV all day and be productive in life. However, while I pray for those listening who are struggling against this distracting temptation, the program inspired me to think in a different way about my own schedule challenges and time-wasting tendencies. I mean, it's something that we all have to fight against. She says, toward the end of her message, on a slightly different note here, I have a distant friend who asked about my church, quote-unquote, signed up for the correspondence course online and is benefiting from the music resources on PCOG.org. Also, my brother, after so much trouble in his life, has begun to read Mystery of the Ages, and our wonderful God seemed to respond after just one reading session, giving him immediate victories in court proceedings, interpersonal relationships, and financial struggles to help keep him on the right path. How wonderful it is to watch. That's a wonderful report from the field about the impact of God's truth. Here's another one in response to the trumpet brief, The New American Morality. That was Joel Hilliker's from last week. It says here, very well outlined and put, America has great sins. Keep praying. Keep believing. Merry Christmas. Well, that one might want to go back and listen to the top of the show on today's program. It says another one here from Texas. Wonderful message. Thank you for your extensive dedication. All of your obvious hard work and meditation on God's truth sheds much, much light on this country's almost inconsolable state. To your question, can a nation so racked with division and self-loathing, so wholehearted in its adherence to a perverse moral standard, survive? My immediate answer is, I hope not. Thankfully, however, this last stage of our ruin is soon coming to a dramatic end. Only then, after this world is brought to repentance, can we truly experience a new beginning where the God of heaven will begin to forcibly direct all of our paths. That's from Texas. This one here from last Friday, it says, as Dennis Prager explains, the Israeli-Palestinian problem is easy to explain but hard to solve because one side simply wants the other side dead. Only God can solve such a problem by changing the heart of men. And then he refers to Mr. Armstrong, some of the statements he's made over the years. This one here in response to Europe's detailed military planning, and this one is somewhat skeptical. It'll take 30 years to develop a viable European unified military. Personally, I don't see it happening at all. Too many special interest roadblocks like acceptance of foreign generals leading foreign troops. But let's assume the Europeans pull it off and create a unified military. My question is, why and what for? There exists today enough firepower alone coming from, say, France, of all places, to take care of Iran and any other Middle East country. I just don't see a unified European military entity. Well, that, in a lot of ways, it makes the point of what I was saying earlier. France does have a lot of power. France has nuclear weapons. And that's the point. You bring 10 of them together, and you have a superpower that's going to shock the world, as Mr. Armstrong says. When it finally emerges and everyone sees it, there is firepower there in those individual nations. That op-ed I read to you from Handelsblatt, it said as much. You put us all together, and we're a force to be reckoned with. And that's the truth. Of course, the Bible prophesies that those 10 will come together. Another one here, it says, thank you for your stunning trumpet brief. I do appreciate the time, energy, effort, and research that you've done to bring us the truth and God's perspective on where we are, what is happening in the news in regard to God's prophecies. Further on here, I'll skip over a couple. It says, as for the boring details of the European planning, this again is in response to Richard's Trumpet brief. As to the boring details of the European planning and logistics, we know it is all very necessary for the success of the coming EU army. It all, for me at least, highlights just how close we must be to some very dramatic events occurring in America and Britain and the former Commonwealth countries. As Mr. Armstrong used to say, it's all going to shock the world with its sudden appearance. Another couple of responses to my father's trumpet brief from Wednesday. It says, thank you for the one and only article that I've read on the Jerusalem situation that is an unbiased and excellent explanation of what is happening. Every other article I've read, even if they are very good, the author has let a little bit of his own bias slip into the article. It's just so very apparent that God is working through you. I can't thank you enough for this insightful and non-biased article. It has helped me to really get what is going on at this moment and what it portends for the future. Well, that's a good place, I think, to leave off as we bring to an end another week of live broadcasting on KPCG.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Send us an email this weekend. You can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you Monday.